to give a general outline of the period of time. During the days of the retreat, it can happen that there's the range and variety of different experiences that come. There may well be questions which you feel are important for you, that you'd like to look into and explore. And of course, as well, there is much which is listened to, and that listening can be from the morning instructions, from a guided meditation, from the teachings during the afternoon, from the small groups, one-to-ones, etc. So the period of time of the day may touch upon various areas and issues, and the invitation, as you see here with the cushion, that if anyone wishes to come and take the seat here, then the inquiry gets underway. With the period of time of the inquiry, there may last for just a few minutes, 5 or 10 minutes, it may last 20 minutes, half an hour. The person or myself can say thank you to bring it to a close, and then there are a couple of shared silent minutes together, and then I'll make another invitation, and then another person may wish to come to speak. The intention behind these inquiry periods is that it is a real contribution, we trust, towards insight and some understanding for every single one of us, and sometimes it offers some shedding of fresh light on situations, may contribute to some inspiration. One important factor of the inquiry period is, of course, the process and the act of listening. And listening is an avenue or a means or a vehicle which includes the outer listening, and in this case of two people speaking and looking at something together, and correspondingly the listening inwardly. What are the responses as you listen? Are any feelings and thoughts arising? Is there interest or boredom or views and opinions from oneself arising, etc.? So the inner and outer listening is an important engagement here, and of course the tradition is one which right from the very, very early days, 2,500 years ago, spoke of Shravana. Means it's a teachings of listening, of silence, of practices, and it was generally felt that the combination of listening and the silences and the practices, that these proved to be extremely supportive vehicle or catalyst for real inner change, for real awakening of the heart. So having said that, the other course is the small reminder that for the person and myself, because we have the same privileges here, to be able to say thank you at any point, at any time, to as the signal to bring the inquiry to a close. So, two extremely nice cushions have been, no flowers, but two nice cushions have been provided there, and sometimes, as people may notice, that a question or questions may go to me, and I do my level best to avoid answering them, especially the difficult ones, and return them back. But I'll, generally speaking, we'll also give some response or answer or view at some point as well. So with this, please, as much as possible, maximizing your questions to the here and now. Here and now, and that means of the days here, and experiences, areas of interest and concern that you may have about your own practice, about what you've listened to, or anything else which you feel is important and might be of interest to others. So anyone would like to come, you're very welcome.
Thank you.
Lisa, please come.
Hello.
Hi.
I would like to ask about something you said yesterday.
Yes.
Or maybe it was the first day.
It's all right. Can hear. Or
and I have an argument or dialogue with it.
All right.
You said that life is a psychological event.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
And you said that you, for me, it sounds like you did a not dichotomic, but you said like there is the difference between perceiving life as a material event, which you said society is now, and life as a psychological event. And I must say, for me, the view that life is a psychological event is quite easy. It's good for me. As a psychologist and as myself, that's like to be in my thoughts and in my dreams. But I found myself this period and last years, most of my problems, issues, my longing, the things I want are in the world, are not here. And I also find that using this view that life is a psychological event sometimes keeps me in here. And I don't know how to, or I'm asking how to approach to the material things in life that I want to do. I want to build things, I want work, I want to communicate with others who have other psychological world themselves. So, and if I'm thinking life is this psychological event...
All right. I'll respond a little bit. It's true. I said that. All right. Thanks. So, I wasn't saying this as some absolute, carved in the rock, holy commandment of truth. Could be for some people a helpful viewpoint to be able to recognize in life how much of life is around the psychology. Every act of war, violence, destructiveness of our environment, and all the terrible unhappinesses, firstly and foremost, it's a psychological event in which men and women cannot communicate with each other, and the consequences of violence. So I had that kind of situation in mind. The other, and which I recall I said as well, that for a human being to have access to the material world, which is extremely important there, and physical birth, aging, pain and death is not only a psychological event, it is a physical event. The world does have a material characteristic to it. The world and the psychology and the physicality are dependent on each other. Of course, acknowledge all of that. But again, what I had in mind as well is that to even have access to the material world and to others, we need the inner life is the instrument. If my inner life is in poor shape, in the whole variety of reasons, it's extremely difficult to really connect with others, because the only thing I've got is this vehicle to look at it through. Dead people can't look at somebody else. So they might try. And so in that, and just going back for a moment, there are some things in the material world that we genuinely need food, clothing, shelter, medicine at times, etc. Those material needs are not psychological, but the inner life recognizes that. Just going to the material world for the moment, is there anything that you think about a lot or obsess about in the material world? If
it's,
I may ask.
It's materialness. It's materialness.
The
thing that is, I can say, work and relationship.
Yes.
The thing with money, I don't get it.
You mean you don't get it? Mean you don't have it, or you don't get it, you don't
both,
understand?
Both.
Both.
Both. both. Maybe I don't want to get it, but money is very material, and
but it's emotional too.
It's emotional, but the emotion that I have for money is nikur. How do you say?
Alienation.
It's like to think that I work for money, and to think it's that's, and it sounds, it looks like a game for me. I don't understand why now I get little money. In a few years, maybe I'll get a lot of money. For me, it's, I don't,
or less,
or less. And also with the relationship, sometimes I feel that in order to be in the world,
yes,
if it's work, if it's relationship, I need to put my I don't know how to say it, psychological myself aside.
Yes.
All the thoughts, how I want to see the world, how I view things, sometimes are not in coherence with what I see outside.
No.
With what I see in the paycheck, with what I see in the news.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to put them together.
Coming back to the original one-liner that I had had used in the meeting place of our inner life, the psychology, the mentality, the emotionality, the thought, the view, the opinion, all that which makes up the psychology of the human being, that psychology enters into a dynamic with others, both material in the material world, in the sentient world, and in the, including the human world. And surely an important aspect of all of that is recognizing as best as possible where the inner life, the psychology, genuinely feels clear, relaxed and comfortable with. And knowing ourselves would be to know where the difficult spots are, and what kind of life with others, with work, with money and with material things could we have a very clear, wise relationship with, as so-called being in the world. We'd like to comment on, if you wish, areas of your life which you feel not perfectly but reasonably comfortable and clear with, and any areas of your life which you feel require more attention, either in the psychology of others or in the world of material things such as money and goods. Difficult question, but you can always
very broad one. Very broad one.
Not so broad.
I start with the thing I have a battle with.
Where you have a battle with.
Okay.
Go on.
Material things that I perceive that are only material. I don't see their soul. I don't see.
Nor do I, but anyway, carry on.
So name
something in the material world.
Money.
Money.
The last inquiry I made was with you about organizing.
Yes.
Order.
All right.
It was very hurtful. Conflict. conflict, being in conflict, politics.
Yeah. So just to take you, what would be a change?
The government.
Yeah. What would be a change within for you, in which hand on heart you can say, with all the insecurity, the unsteadiness of money, more and less, which is a common problem or viewpoint, what would be a clear relationship with money that there is no signal of any battle or conflict with it? What would tell you?
I don't know. I think that I'm not sure I have a relationship with money. That's what I want to add. I like put it aside.
But the putting aside is still a relationship, but the relationship is put aside.
I don't feel it.
It pushed. I know. It's pushed away. But since you mentioned it, it's gone from the side right into the foreground right now. So at the moment, it's not put aside. So when something is right in front, money. What is the relationship to money, which is a fact, money, and a feeling, connection with, which would make it clear and unproblematic, regardless of more or less or none?
What is my relationship?
What would be a relationship which you could develop so that money is no longer a problem, whether it's more, less or none?
It's still hard for me to think about relation. Maybe if it will be connected to my doings, to that I will feel that I have an effect on it, which I don't. That I have not control, but ashpah. Effect.
Influence.
And it's not in the hand of the others who use it, or I don't know what they do with it, but...
On this one, it would, if I may say, it would be worthwhile, while you were here, giving a little reflection to this, because money carries such strong feelings and views for rather a lot of people around security and insecurity. Money is so much in the world of measurement. I have enough, I don't have enough. I need more, or whatever. And that tends to be problematic because it easily triggers anxiety and comparing. And it's that the problem, there's a problem with money in our culture. It's like an epidemic as a problem. And human beings are not addressing this problem. They're doing what you do. They put it aside. And we've got to actually bring it right back to consciousness and see what is a healthy way of being with money. And all I can suggest is, you got some time here, give a little reflection to it. Forget work and forget the future and forget the past. Just the material sense of money.
But they think
shekels.
Shekels, but shekels are material, are not only.
I know.
You tell me to go through my psychological world.
No, and not in this case.
So because money, I need the. The government and the economy.
No. You're moving into the metaphysic.
Okay.
Government and you're running away from giving attention to money. Just the money, your relationship.
Okay.
Yeah. Just your a way of relating to it, as I say, which is clear with its presence, whether the view is more or less or none. Really listen carefully to have a really steady relationship with it.
Can you give me an example? Because I'm blank.
Eh? No. No, I can't.
Okay.
Which word has most feeling around it? Shekels or money?
Money.
All right. Okay. So make this word during the day a word which you repeat regularly. And just listen inside to what arises through its repetition. I was listening to the Dalai Lama. He made me laugh. He said, some of the Tibetan Lamas, they're so much interested in money, which is true, and they go off to places where there is money, US, Taiwan, Singapore, etc. They don't come to Israel. Not to Spain or England. And he said, so they've got a new mantra. It used to be, Om Mani Padme Hung. No, it's Om Mani Mani Hung. So tomorrow it's Om Mani Mani Hung. And just to see what feelings evoke around this particular word there. And what would it be to touch the deep and just feel comfortable with the word money? Right. So have a quiet minute or two and then another invitation.
I'd like to speak about ask about the issue of guilt.
Guilt. Yeah. Issue of guilt.
I think the last life, this one. I had a lot of, I feel like I have a lot of feelings of guilt. And with that, I feel lately it's coming maybe to be more clear about feeling of being a burden. Like my presence might be a burden, or what I say, what I do, whatever stuff, like my presence in general,
yes,
might be a burden on other people, society, especially towards people. I think I lost that. My burden is on environment. It's a concept I had, and it's less and less, but about relating to other people.
Is the perception and the view widespread, that means anybody that you communicate with, is it with particular kinds of people? When is the feeling of burden or guilt strongest for you? When do you notice it most strongly? When was the recent time when that feeling of being a burden to another or others or guilt was really there in consciousness, in the inner life?
Today, but it's not something I would like to talk about, because it's related to retreat.
Yes.
So I don't feel like...
No, don't have to. Feel.
But, I don't know. My mother. That's an easy one.
Right. Just give me a sense. So, tell me, is there a difference? Because for me there is. Is there a difference between burden and guilt? What does burden bring to mind? What is guilt?
I think, first of all, like, the connection is that my... the effect that my life and actions create in somebody else's life, and what's the difference?
So that would sound more like burden, wouldn't it? The actions and the impact that it has on others. Do you always view that as a burden?
No. I feel I have some kind of fear of what my actions might do, because I also think that most of what I do is great. Really,
yeah. I have a feeling, like, and from feedback I get from people, I get like I have really good intentions, and it creates good things in the world. But also, like a real strong fear of hurting somebody, like doing something that will hurt somebody, and then I can see that when I get a response which I might interpret it as I did hurt somebody, it's like,
that's the
goal. Wow, that's like so strong. Like I think about it and I feel it like here, sitting on me.
In the dynamic of relationship, there is the intention to share, to give, to say, to speak, to point out, to reveal with the other. There is the action, which is the words in this case, which is said, and there is the fruit, the outcome. And human beings, we're constantly concerned with this intention, action, result, or dynamic there. Are you putting too much emphasis on your interpretation of the result of your impact on another? And that can then interpret it, the result, in a particular way, which has the consequence of reinforcing guilt feeling and reinforcing the view, I am a burden.
I would say, yes, I feel it's like very much, I feel I also interpret, like, it's like a cycle.
Of course
it's very much a cycle, I can see it also.
So, in the inner life, since we're human, you're human, we're engaged in this field of intention, actions, and results, where are you going to place the trust if there's an exaggerated emphasis on how you interpret what comes back? If you interpret it in a particular way, you get the weight, you get the burden, feeling of being a burden. It reinforces the fear. It inhibits free communication in case you say something wrong or you don't say it skillfully, etc. So, same question. What is a way to look at another human being who is important to you, who you're communicating with, and you're not reliant on the interpretation? What is a way to look at another human being and not be so reliant on the interpretation to the point it feels a burden, it adds to the fear, and you feel guilty? That's too much reliance. Too much.
Completely blank.
Nice.
Yeah.
Take your time.
Maybe you can ask the question in a different way that I feel I'll get it more. Well, okay.
There's the intention.
There is.
To speak to another or to me. There's the activity. You're talking to me. There's a response from me. And in the moment, the feeling is just at the moment, my mind has gone blank. This could feel like, it's a burden to be sitting here. I shouldn't have come up. I'm wasting other people's time. I feel guilty. All based on me being unable to ask a question clearly.
Yeah. I feel that what happens usually is when I have it, it's like it comes from the beginning and then it goes through the whole process, the feeling of guilt. Yes. If I don't have it at the beginning of the communication, it doesn't stay.
Alright.
And as if it only intensifies. If I have the feeling of guilt, then then like, okay, I have the feeling of guilt anyway, or this tension or whatever, and then I come to speak, and then there's kind of like immediate interpretation of what you say according to that, whether it to is it beneficial or should I feel good or bad. Like it feels like intensifies, so it's a way to kind of get out of it.
Alright. So the initial, as so to speak, place where the communication comes from is important for you, for that to be clear, because if it's coming from memory or painful memory or from guilt, which is always past connected, then that, as it were, will carry into the stream of the communication. Yeah. In this communication with me, there, clear, unclear, burden, guilt, or something else, in this last 5 or 10 minutes?
No guilt.
No guilt.
No burden.
No burden. Allah is merciful.
Yeah, I love him.
Alright, no guilt and no burden. Excellent. So, the absence of is lovely and precious to hear. What's contributed to the absence of any burden in having to talk or answer my questions, not feeling guilty if there's a blank screen or Christopher's reacting in a certain way? What is giving support to this communication without guilt and without burden for you right now? What's making that possible?
I think there's no, I don't feel I have a lot of like intention to deliver anything. I don't need to make anything happen so much.
Right.
So if I don't need to make anything happen, then it doesn't matter what happens.
Okay.
And
so in,
and also I can say that mostly just like I feel currently I feel relaxed. Like I was more pressured there before I raised my hand than when I came here, and like so the whole time I feel relaxed during the process, so I don't feel any.
A little bit of the contribution to the relaxation is that to some degree you come, and mostly, in a way, you're making the statements and asking me the questions. And therefore, if there would be any burden, if there would be, it might be at this side, because you're just asking the questions. But what about when you're telling somebody something, and you're a little unsure about how the person will react? So you're not asking for, you're telling them. And in the telling, or in the informing, there could be more vulnerability to feeling this is a burden. So, tell me something. Tell me something about today. Anything.
Anything about today?
Anything you wish. Tell me.
After dinner, I went to hear the muezzin, and it was great. Yeah, just next to the fence.
Yes.
It was so beautiful, and there was sunset.
Been at the top of the hit parade for about 1,000 years. It's very popular. Nice. All right. You went to Londonier. Okay. Something else. Anything.
Today, I had something really nice happen.
Yes.
I got myself a new bed, and after
a new what?
bed. Like I got a mattress. Yeah, and a different place. Okay. I went to sleep at like at 1:30.
Yes.
Woke up at, I don't know, 2:45 or something. Yes. Didn't hear the bell or anything. I thought.
Any guilt?
Was mostly confusion.
Confusion. Like,
what's going on? What time is it? I don't have a watch. And that felt really good. It's kind of, I'm doing that. Yesterday I didn't come to the sitting. Today I didn't wake up for the Qigong. I didn't wake up for the.
Look, don't encourage them.
So,
sounds like a confession. All right, good spirit. All right, nice. with the good spirits of your and the good communication, everything that you've said, there's a certain trust in the spirit of the good intentions, in the voice which is there, and sometimes we really don't know what we say, how it lands with another. We really, 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 we really don't know. And it might be received in a very welcome way at one point, and then the person has a change of view later, might be received with some resistance and hostility, and later the person changes their mind, just like you and I might. So we do need, in the movement of intention, actions and result, keep in touch with the intentions, to feel that they're healthy and not harmful and not destructive, and keep in touch with the voice that goes with that, and keep an open mind to how it may be seen. To keep an open mind to how it may be seen by you. So essentially, less reliant on the result. It's a dangerous area. Enough?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Quite mental too. One invitation.
First question about fear stage.
About
fear stage being here.
Oh yes.
Mm-hmm. Why is it so threatening? And why, like Asaf said, it's more threatening when you're down there than up here.
You're the one with the issue, so.
So you're asking me?
You got it.
So, what? Tell me a little bit before walking up. What was the feeling or sensations that were going on?
Still on.
Pardon?
Still on.
Still.
Still valid.
Still valid. So then you walk up and you sit here, there, and what is it about fear or being? What is it about fear or being frightened of others? And so sometimes, for some people, it's almost by the numbers. Two or three people, it's okay. Five or ten, it's okay. 50, 100.
To be seen.
To be seen.
Yes, sir.
But in the silence, you're being seen by 100 odd people all day, aren't you? In different ways.
But you're not in the front.
Not in front.
In the front. No, I'm in the front. In the front.
I mean, the one of the when in Britain they did this poll some years ago and asked what people's biggest fear was, and the top of the list was public speaking, and the second was death. So it sounds like public speaking is worse than death, which. Bit hard to comprehend, but anyway.
It means then that I overcame death, no?
We'll see. The aspect of all this, what is underneath the fear? So fear is a formation, unpleasant sensation. It can drive us towards or away from. It can generate a lot of reaction. When you look in yourself, including this one, and there are some fears, fright, stage fright, whatever you call it. What's looking deeply into it? What's under it? What's going on in there?
I think the threat to fail, failure.
The threat to failure. So the threat to failure would be is it one
in various ways? In various ways.
Yes. So one looks at the world around, and there is a perception which takes place. That others may view, in the case, this as failure. There. But you're not going to get a chance to ask everybody here whether they view your visit up here as a success, as a failure, or not have a view either way, are
you? That's a pity.
It's a pity. So there's not much chance of getting any accurate reflection, even though the fear arises. So one is, I agree though, one is the fear of being judged. Fear of failure, the fear of being judged. What else might be lying under in the deep, in the inner life around there? Around speaking, but there is some fear that goes with it.
For me, it's all about failing.
Failing.
For example, that I won't understand you, that I will say something that
yes.
stupid or
yes,
I don't
right,
know.
Right. So in the dynamic, the view and the impression and the idea, rather painful one of failure, comes in. So the mind is in these two conditions of success and failure. Can arise, and there is the wish for to feel it successful. There is some feeling of failure there, and that might will rely when you leave here on the condition of your mind and the view that you take. You might say it went great, it went very well, or the mind might say it was a complete disaster, I should have stayed where I was. The mind say, well, I really don't know how I feel about how it went, etc. So we get into this success, failure, oh hell, I don't really know there. Is that the only possibility to look at the immediate event and the dialogue that's happening?
Two things going on in my mind. One is past failures.
Past failures.
I mean,
past interpretations of failures.
Mm-hmm. Naturally.
Mm-hmm.
And
go slowly. So very easily, the memory from the past may not have a story, but a feeling or stories comes in, and the memory enters into the present, and the memory has a tendency to it, and the tendency in the memory and in the anguish or the pain is therefore to interpret as was interpreted before, which this could be a failure, this could go wrong, I could get misunderstood, I could not make myself clear. So that memory lands in the present and affects the judgment here and now.
Determining the future.
Pardon?
All goes to determining the future.
Yes.
In a way that to prevent me from trying in the future.
Mm.
In case. Or
yeah. So failure, when it's the belief in it and the view of it has extra weight, it will inhibit creativity, initiative, energy, fearlessness. It handicaps a person. It cripples them. What I'm doing there. So despite the history around the word failure as a condition, nevertheless, you still got from there to here. So failure didn't move you.
And the truth is that I used all this issue just to throw myself to the stage.
Yes.
And I actually wanted to talk about something else. Sorry.
All right, that's okay. So just to make it clear with the point, coming back, human beings get trapped in the duality. One set of these dualities is called success and failure. And these can be powerful, influential forces. There. And in such a intensely competitive world that we've created, these two really have a magnetism. I'm saying, repeating, is there another way at looking at movement and initiatives without carrying ideas of success and failure? I'm still answering.
I got the question just now. Experiencing.
All right. Good start. So
curiosity playing right. Again.
So if the change is going to come and to liberate oneself from this duality, which is a nightmare, then the movement will have to be looking in another way. Interest will have to be there. Curiosity will have to be there. I'm not looking for a particular answer. What else has to come in extremely well, powerfully and effectively, so that one can put hand on one's heart and say, I do not live in the world of success and failure?
To be careless for the result.
To be?
Careless. Careless. For
right.
The result.
Okay. So, the not giving the priority to the result will then mean there will be less interpretation. One's got to view something as a result in order to determine it's a success or a failure. Mm-hmm. Is there any such... Can anybody show anything which is a result? Where is a result? Show me the result.
This?
What?
I'm a result of the meeting of my parents, for example.
Pardon? Would they see that as a success or failure? Sorry,
I'll ask them later.
Wicked, wicked.
My mother would be proud of me.
Nice, sweet, sweet. So the curiosity and the interest is vital here. But other factors, we're looking at causes and conditions, which are such, there's this ongoing process going on, and we take out something and we call it a result. And on the result arises success or failure. So you might say, oh, when you get off the cushion in a minute or two, you walk over there and say, ah, there, that's the result. And then when you get over there, or in the evening, or in the middle of the night, the views of success and failure are rising, because you got the idea that was the result. But if it's not a result, and it's a ongoing process, if it's not a result, and just an ongoing process, what's going to happen to success and failure?
It will fall.
Got it. Thank you.
Enough. Thank you.
I know. We have somebody whispered it's a failure. Sharp. All right, we'll have a quiet minute and then I'll give a short reflection. It does happen, and it happens easily enough, that at times we push something aside, we push something away. But in the pushing of something away, it never goes too far away, because it will always be somewhere within us, rather close to the immediacy. And one of those areas that we can push away is the area, as we heard, around money. And money, as I mentioned, is the material, as the good person said, but also equally there's a feeling, emotional connection with it as well. And with money, the material and the emotion easily get linked up together. With all the dynamics that go on around this particular substance there, it does take some practice for all of us and some skill to have calm, clear, relaxed relationship with it. And that practice of that requires a lot of vigilance, because if we don't, there will be a lot of projection, and the projections will be in the form of lack, I mentioned yesterday with you, of wanting more, sometimes building up hopes, or which can lead to much disappointment, or generating more stress and more fear. And a human being living in stress and fear around money, building up hopes around money, projecting into money, is not actually seeing money, not actually connected with it, and is attributing it with a significance which it actually doesn't have. And there are ways of our exploration, and it's a real important dialogue, so that our heart and mind isn't corrupted around the money ideology. And sometimes with some bringing it there, not being afraid of it, putting it to the foreground with us, finding a steady relationship with it in the daily life, will bring much more genuine, authentic peace of mind, and from that we can take calm, clear steps in what's necessary in that small area of life, so that it doesn't get an exaggerated place in the field of life. It isn't easy, as the good yogi said, that to really recognize, both in the large group of us and in the other situations of silence. And there is, there's a small voice from her, of course, at times, the sense of loneliness can arise. And it's a very, very widespread phenomena. In European cities, probably similar here, some 50% of apartments, flats, homes in the cities are occupied by people who are living alone. I live alone as well, and a number of you in here will as well. And sometimes too, people can be in a relationship with their family or with their partner or lover, husband or wife, and still feel quite strong pangs of loneliness. And that attention to that, that in giving exploration to that, the great replacement for loneliness is love. It's the indispensable element. And some of us who've had the privilege of spending time in the silence and have gone through some of the waves of the difficult voice, the terms of isolation, find a real love and a real appreciation for the silence, really acknowledge it well, and it's one of the wonderful antidotes to loneliness. Another one, of course, which is also important, is a real intimacy with the non-human world, because sometimes in the middle of the night, sometimes in the day, sometimes on the street, we may not have the opportunity for any real contact with the other. And the sentient world of animals and birds and trees and flowers, and the connection with that, really reminds us we are never alone, and it's not really possible to be there. The other is in communications with others, that if the kindness and love can shine through, well, it makes it much easier for others. But if the loneliness has a large hole in it, it will put pressure on another for more and more attention, more and more time with. And that pressure upon the other, she or he or they will begin to feel that pressure and start to withdraw. And the consequence of that is one feels even more lonely. So sometimes it just arises quite briefly, as the good person said, and it's just a small phenomena, but I'm just putting it out into the wider picture. And to be able to recognize what silence is and how much rests in the silence. Even Christopher's voice coming over to you, and the regular wedding, they're shooting each other, are they? It's a bit early, and whatever. So the sounds come from different places and different directions. I was walking past a wedding in India a couple of years ago, and the guys have got the rifles and guns, and they're firing up in the air. And, you know, haven't they heard of Newton's law? What goes up comes down, etc. And they're firing, and one hit the branch and shot this branch off and just fell in front. So even with the various sounds that come through, around the sounds, even through the sounds, there's a lot of silence. You know, there's the voice here and the sounds there, but look at all the silence. There's the material world there, all the constructions there, but look at all the non-material world. It's only 4% in the universe is material. So that sense of the silence just genuinely helps to open and expand consciousness more. As we mentioned too, and was discussed upon, touched upon there, this relationship of intention, action and result is one of the most important areas in the field of existence. This looking at that, because how much of our life, either from others or from ourselves, revolves around these three themes and the relationship between these three. We may not always get the results that we wish. So sometimes we have to trust completely, unquestioningly, implicitly, that are in our intentions and in what we do. And it may be that sometimes it's polar opposite of what we wish. And I've got in mind here all the people, including a number of you, who are in various forms of health service, people who are acting on behalf of others, from the doctors and the surgeons and the nurses and the psychologists and the counsellors and the social workers and the Dharma teachers and much, much else. A whole army of people doing wonderful and precious work. And even with the most wonderful and precious work, it cannot guarantee nor assure that the outcome which we intend and which we wish will be the one that comes. And we've got to be extremely clear about this. And it may not be. But then we have to turn the attention back and look at one's intention and say, but the intention was there. And have trust in it. Otherwise, we're in the danger of beating ourselves up and judging ourselves because our intention, it didn't work out in the way that we wished. And that applies to many primary areas of life and interest. So let's keep a real clear mindfulness of this. And finally, the Buddha spoke of eight, what he called, worldly conditions. And human beings easily get stuck and trapped in them. We heard just now two of them, success and failure. There. And that must carry past images, memories, thoughts and feelings and stories and events, which then act as the shadow over the present. Can we look at a situation, whatever it may be, without being trapped in that, as we were listening to, and some nice reflections from you. The other worldly reflections is similar, but it's gain and loss. And at the times in life we receive, we gain, and sometimes we lose. Some things come into our life and things go out. This world of gain and loss, having and not having. Another one pair is in regards to praise and blame. And we might get words of appreciation, we get praise for this, and we get blamed for that. And if we live reliant and dependency in what other people say about us, good luck. Because you know, the same person can say wonderful things one day and something completely the opposite the next day. And as I said, there is no absolute stability with human beings. We're in the categories of the unpredictable there. And we've got to get that down there and understand it very well, so when praise comes we can appreciate it, and when the blame comes we can recognize it. And sometimes in anger from another and fault finding and putting us down, it could be in all of that stuff that is dumped upon us, it could be there is a truth in it. There may be something in it, if we really listen, that really might be useful to pick up. But because blaming and fault-finding and putting down is the most unsatisfactory form of communication, because mostly we only hear the attack, and it's the attack which makes it a problem to hear what might be true in the statement, because we attack. And therefore the working on ourselves is to live a non-violent life, a life of non-violent communication. And it's a great practice and a challenge for us. So if we And the other one is pleasure and pain, which includes in it health and sickness, and life touches on all of this: success and failure, gain and loss, praise and blame, health and sickness, pleasure and pain. This is life. This is what it goes on in the worldly conditions. And it's a great practice, as we were just listening to really work with all of this and then ask, but what else? What else? And what else is far more significant? Thank you for lending an ear.